Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Cat and Dizzy Show, and I am your host, Catastrophe, and my co-host, Disaster, is here with me. Dizzy, are you there?
Yeah, you said that last week. I'm Dizzy, your cat. I'm Disaster, your Catastrophe. Anyway, yes, I am here. Good evening, all.
Yay.
Good evening.
Hi. Good evening.
Hi.
I have a kitten by my feet, and I'm sure hoping he doesn't unplug electrical things. But if he does and I disappear, you'll know why. Ouch.
Okay.
Oh, and he has sharp teeth. And yeah. Anyway, yeah. So you, yeah. Unfortunately, while I'm on the phone with this, when I try to touch the screen so I can read my text, it like blacks out. It hasn't happened.
Okay.
And I kept trying to get to another text message, and I wasn't able to access it. So I apologize if it was from you.
Oh, it might have been. Yeah, it might have been. No big deal.
Yeah.
Okay. So do we have a topic tonight, or are we just kind of bouncing around? I know I have a little bit of exciting stuff, but we'll start with you if you've got something, you know, cool.
Well, I don't know how cool it is. In fact, it's kind of all over the news and the media, and that's, of course, the Supreme Court Justice nominee Kavanaugh and the accusations by Dr. Ford, who is a psychologist, that when they were in high school, that he had sexually assaulted her at a party.
Groped her.
Yeah. Groped her.
No rape, no nothing.
Well, he jumped on top of her. She had quite the story, and says
she
that when she and her husband went through, when they went through counseling and everything, that, well, even before that, she had told her husband that she'd been assaulted, and it was a guy that was probably going to be a Supreme Court nominee someday. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I am not laughing.
That is a hell of a coincidence. She must be like a, you know, fortune teller.
Psychic psychologist. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so her testimony, she's like all over the place. You know, I don't remember.
I'm
going to
say, Kat.
I didn't see them, but it was, yeah, go ahead.
You and I have not discussed this at all since, you know, since the whole thing. But all I know is that I watched almost the entire thing, which I find kind of hard to believe because it's not really my cup of tea. But I was watching it to see, you know, the whole Clarence Thomas accusations, the same thing that happened to him, and so on and so forth. And of course, I was younger then, so I didn't really, you know, I was raising kids and I didn't really pay much attention. But, you know, looking back on that, it's kind of interesting too. But there's so many things wrong with this whole situation that it's a little bit mind-boggling. But I did, and I admit that I did watch almost the entire thing. So I do have that under my belt, if that's a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know.
Well, I don't know. There's some things I'd rather not have under my belt. I'd rather, like, vomit them out than have them under my belt. But, you know, I kind of wonder, and somebody suggested, even with Clarence Thomas and all that, that the woman who was so adamant that this had happened to her, that perhaps it was mind control, you know, that
possibly.
She'd gotten to
that
it.
Is possible.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
why would
and, you kind of want?
Oh, never mind. I went way too deep in that. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, that if they planted those thoughts in her psyche, that she really would believe that it happened, and would
I
be
doubt
convincing.
That. I
him
just
past.
Think she's a big fat liar. I honestly
well,
actually, think
I
she's
do
a big
too.
Fat
this,
liar.
In this situation, I really do too. To be honest.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just too.
Yeah.
It's just too stupid. It's too strange. All of it is just. You just sit back and kind of look at it, and I was like, oh, my God, this is just crazy. And there's so many people, and all the protesters, if they're even real protesters, they could be fake, and I don't even know. But how do these people get this so adamant about some of these things that they come out with through the media? It blows me away. Can they not see what's going on? Can they not see it?
Yeah. No, no. Yeah, they – well, how can they not? Because it's – well, the theater to them – how do I want to say this? They believe what they, everything they see on Little House on the Prairie and MASH too, that, you know, of course MASH was really a show, but you know what I'm saying? Everything becomes fact to them because it was on the television. It was from the Oracle. And so they believe that the television and the news and the media is the Oracle of God. I sat and talked with, and I'll just say my mother, who's in her, she's 83, and she, she'll say to me, well, I heard her, and it was, you know, it was so, that poor woman, how could you not believe her? I saw this. How could you, you're going to tell me that wasn't real or wasn't true? And, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, I had pulled up on YouTube. It was a broadcast from years ago when, because she had said something to me about, you mean to tell me Walter Cronkite, you know, wasn't telling us the truth in the nightly news, or, you know, that he had an agenda,
right,
or was part of that. So I pulled it up where he had accepted the Globalist Award and was congratulated by Hillary Clinton. And, you know, where he said that, you know, the globalist agenda, if that's what it takes to do it. I can't remember the exact words, but pretty much if the devil's behind it, then I'm with the devil or something. It was like out there. And my mother's
weird
jaw dropped, and oh, my gosh. And then she snaps back like a rubber band because their psyche can only accept so much. They have a core truth or value that they hold to. And even when they see the truth, even when it's presented before their eyes, they will always snap back to that until, and at her age it probably won't happen, but until it's so close to home or it's so traumatic that they can't deny the truth anymore.
That it won't snap back anymore. Yeah.
Well, no.
Agreed. And
go ahead.
Well, it does happen to people, and hopefully people will, you know, get that snap and decide to actually open their eyes and kind of look around for themselves and dig
red
deeper
pill,
into the real
pill
picture. Yeah, exactly.
Yes, red pill, blue pill. And there are those, it's uncomfortable when you know the truth and you find out it doesn't hold with what you thought. Very disillusioning.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very disillusioning and it's very uncomfortable. And, you know, who wouldn't like to live in La La Land and think that everything's great and, you know, all that sort of thing. But it isn't. And in fact, I posted something on Facebook today. It's a song by Tim Hawkins. He does parodies of different songs, rewrites them, kind of like the Weird Al. And he's a Christian comedian, but he did this one. It was like from the Candyman. He took the Candyman and rewrote it. The government can, you know. Who can take your money?
Yeah, I think I've heard that.
It has really good. I want to borrow the audio for the show because it just cracks me up every time I hear it because he's dead on. You can tell he had a little bit of an angst when he wrote it. And I'm sure it was not too long after the banker bailouts because he's very aware of what's going on too. And it's just like, blah. You know, so I can see where some people, it's hard for them to accept, especially like at my mother's age, because all their lives they've, you know, they've contributed. And at some point, when you wake up, there's a, you know, what the F moment, and a feelings of betrayal and anger. I mean, you go through all the stages of grief, basically. But also, there's a realization that this happened on my watch. It happened before me, but it happened on my watch. And at what point do I wake up? What do I do? You know, how can I fix this? I mean, you have to ask some hard questions that call for action. And for an older person, you know, they just, some of them just want a nice, peaceful, quiet rest of their life here, pretending everything's fine. And really?
And we are so close to being roasted and toasted on numerous occasions.
Yeah.
Which leads me,
no kidding.
Which kind of leads me to the to that next topic I was going to discuss. And that was the, remember how I was talking about the solar observatory shutting down? We'd mentioned it last week.
Yeah.
And
that
there was lots of weird things going on. And the reason why some of this was kind of close to me is because a couple of towns over called North Salem, Indiana, there's an observatory there. Well, it's like a privately funded thing. Anyway, this woman captured this enormous, huge vehicle, we'll just say vehicle, by the sun. And she got it on video and she passed it around. And that's what happened was I had seen it on on YouTube because she posted it that morning. And I thought, you know, okay, whatever. And then I started hearing about the observatories closing down, the solar ones. And the ones, the FBI had come in and more or less shut them down and told everybody to just go home and not to worry about anything. And they would fix whatever the problem was, called it a security problem, and sent people on their merry way, right? Well, as I looked into it some more and some more, I started finding all these weird coincidences and just stuff that was actually starting to add up to this video that came out of North Salem, Indiana. And that's why I found it kind of interesting, because I didn't link the two until finally I linked the two. And there's a few videos out there about how these two situations are related, along with several other observatories around the planet shutting down as well. So I have a small clip, and I'm going to try to play it for us. We're going to play like 2 minutes of it, and let's just see what happens and see what you guys think of it. Oh, and a lot of stuff I probably could have just mentioned, but I might as well let this do it. But the thing is, it's kind of one of those electronic voices, so it might bug some people, because I know some of them don't like that. But, you know, just picture my beautiful voice saying it instead, and we'll try to get through it together, okay?
Okay.
Yeah, right. Okay, here we go. Hold on 1 second.
Okay, I'm holding on. Okay, and while we're waiting for Dizzy, she's pulling up that video.
Is it working?
I can hear it now.
Are you listening?
Mm-hmm. Now I can't hear it.
You can't hear it? Really?
When you start talking, I can hear it, and then when you stop talking, I can't hear it.
Oh, that's strange. What the hell is that all
about?
Let me see.
Yeah, you want to start it over and make sure your volume's all the way up on your computer.
That's a good idea. It's actually very interesting. It really is. So just give me a second here.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
But you could only hear it while I was talking? That's weird.
Yeah, I could hear it while you were talking. Yeah. Yeah, and while you're getting that ready, I'm just going to let our listeners know you're listening to the Cat and Dizzy Show on ResolutionRadio.com. And we are about to hear a clip from a video regarding the solar flares that happened or did happen, but we were not aware of, in conjunction with and in connection with the closing of solar observatory.
Right, exactly.
Go ahead.
Keep going. Wait, I'm going to plug this in instead.
Okay,
hold on. I'm going to put this down. Hold on.
We are techies. And, yeah. So, yeah, I got to watch that video. It was very interesting. Although I think I only watched the first 2 minutes.
Yeah, this is crazy, man. Okay, hold on.
Okay, and I see we have another caller. And caller, I am going to bring you on, but we are about to listen to a video if you'd like to listen with us. And I believe that's U.S. Okay. Wow,
yep.
Dizzy's.
Okay, I know, it's actually not that hard to do. I don't understand why it's that difficult for me to do this. But I did end up plugging in an extra microphone, a speaker. Okay, so hold on.
Speaker, okay, an extraterrestrial. You plugged in an extraterrestrial.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, my gosh, Dizzy. Dizzy, I don't think we're going to be able to hear it. Dizzy.
Can you hear it?
No, not well enough to understand what you're saying.
Damn. All right, let's just hold on. Could just go ahead and say it, but I don't want to because it's difficult. There's too much stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot on it. And you know what? The visuals are very powerful. I would strongly encourage our listeners to go to the Cat and Dizzy show page on Facebook and look at this video and listen to it.
Yes, and we also, I also posted it. I don't know if I posted it on the on our page or not. I don't know if I had time or if I even got around to it. I don't know. Can't remember.
Well, we'll have it on
after
the show if we could put that.
Uh-huh. Anyway, Kat, you listened to it. So did you grab anything out of it or?
Well, I think it's more than a coincidence that they closed the solar observatories at the same time. And so I would say it's well worth looking into, you know, because I don't trust that. I want to say this. I know that the person who made this video says that they believe that the FBI and the government kept it quiet so people wouldn't panic. I think there's more to it. I really do.
You think?
And
yeah.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
It's a very interesting,
yeah,
and for them to have come out with this large, supposed large craft that actually, you know, helped us not to get hit by solar winds, I thought was kind of interesting. It's not the first video out there that shows this type of thing. There's a few of them that have been captured, and we're talking massive, massive machinery. I mean, there's no question.
It's huge.
Huge.
Yeah.
We're talking
huge,
thousands
and
thousands of miles. Anyway,
yeah.
So since I can't really elaborate on it right now, we'll go ahead and either change topic or just go on, and I'll get more info so that I can actually, you know, play it one of these days.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, it sounded pretty exciting.
It is exciting, actually. And we do have a caller on. U.S., welcome to the show.
Thank
you.
Are you there, U.S.?
Yeah, hello.
Oh.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can. This is the Can You Hear Me Now show tonight. Can you hear it? Can you hear me? Yeah, we can hear you. And we're kind of open topic tonight. So what would you like to bring to the show tonight?
Oh, well, not too much conspiracy stuff, but saw some interesting stuff in physics where they're working with different theories and then nature of matter and everything. Kind of fascinating.
Well, everything's connected and everything's relative, so go right ahead.
Okay.
U.S., we're having a hard time hearing you now.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Now we can hear you. Yeah, with the background.
Yeah, I plugged in
I
plugged in a headset, so it should be easier to hear me now.
Well, we can hear you, but the headset is making a terrible noise.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take that off.
There, thank
is
you.
Is that better?
Yes, it sounded like a motorboat or something. So, yes, thank you. All right. What you got
so,
for tonight?
Are you guys familiar with the double slit experiment?
Double slit experiment.
No. In the quantum mechanics and physics world, it's a really infamous experiment. Because that's what gave quantum mechanics the biggest push into accepted science, and that's how people started going into that field, because it raised a lot of questions about matter and our interactions with it.
So is it kind of like the thing where if you don't see it happen, it may have happened a different way kind of thing?
Yep, that's exactly
what
it is.
I have heard of it. I have heard of it. And it's extremely, like, crazy. So you know about the experiment? Because go ahead and say it if you do. Tell us.
Okay, I can tell you what I remember from reading it and seeing a few videos and stuff. I guess scientists, they weren't originally looking for any connection between matter and consciousness. They were actually just testing equipment. And they're also testing some math that they had, some probability tables and whatnot.
Uh-huh.
Just really normal, boring stuff. And they took called an electron gun, and it shoots a whole bunch of electrons at the same time. And they wanted to test if they had a wall, and in between that, they had a piece of paper with one slit going up and down, and to see how many of the electrons they shot out would go through and hit the wall, and how many would bounce off, according to their math, you know. So they did all that, and they're like, well, this is pretty close, but we have to do other tests to confirm, you know. So they did another test where they had two slits, and they shot the electron gun at the center, one slit on the left, one on the right. So the electron had to figure out which way it wanted to go. You know? And they were shooting a whole bunch at the same time.
Okay.
But when they shot both of these, or when they shot the electrons through both of these slits, what the pattern they got on the back wall wasn't just those two slits. It was those slits all spaced out, and the center slit being the brightest, which was the exact same thing you get if you had standing waves traveling through those slits as like an interference pattern, because that's what you normally see with when they do their wave experiments. And they said, well, that shouldn't be, because electrons are solid particles. They shouldn't act like waves, you know. And
right.
So they tried to do the math on it to figure it out, and the math made even less sense, you know, because according to the mathematicians, they're like, well, it could be traveling through both at the same time, or none of them, or one or the other. Oh, that's not going to help us at all. So, so they said, well, then we'll do another experiment where we'll just have a device that records which slit the electron actually passes through. They decided to just shoot one at a time, one electron at a time, and that was when they started getting those weird patterns. That's what it was. So then they made the device to record which slit it actually passed through, and they only put the device on one slit, and if they didn't get a hit on that device, then they knew it passed through the other one. That's how. Very simple.
Yeah.
So when they had the device turned on to record any passing of any electrons, because they would only shoot one at a time, and when the device was turned on, the electron would go back to behaving like a particle. It would not behave like a wave when it was being recorded. But when it was not being recorded and the device was turned off, then it would go back to behaving like a wave and interfering with itself when it came. And so the best they could figure was that the electron somehow split up, and it took all possible routes to the other end, and it took none of them at the same time, and then it reconverged with itself on the other side and interfered with itself in a wave pattern, and that's how they got the interference patterns over there, which didn't make any sense according to classical physics, because everything's supposed to be solid. So that's how the quantum mechanics people got into it.
Now, see, I know the first time I heard this story, I got chills. I did not get chills this time. You did not give me chills. You asked.
Sorry. I don't I can't explain as well as some of those people that they know it.
Maybe it's because it's the second time I heard it, so it wasn't quite as cool, because they were talking about how people were changing and how it was changing, whether it was being filmed or not being filmed, or being watched by a certain person and not being watched by somebody else. And
I know what you're talking about, because I even read an article where they took it a step farther, and they said, well, what if we as the scientists stop watching this experiment and just let it do it on its own, and then we'll come back later and we'll examine the data. So then our conscience is not involved with this, because they thought maybe somehow them thinking about it was messing with it at subatomic level or whatever. So they left, and they came back a few hours later when the experiment was done. And when they looked at it, it still created an interference pattern, because it knew they were coming back to check on it, because it was, and they were like, okay, you know, now we don't know what's going on. There's nothing they did. There's no way they could trick these electrons into revealing how they pass through objects and all this stuff.
They're trying to get nature to reveal
some of its more mysterious aspects, and it's not. There are some things about it that aren't as easy to reveal, because what scientists are very good at is observing nature. And they understand what they're observing to a good extent. They're good at classify it, they can quantize it, they can come up with formulas, all this stuff. But what they aren't good at is observing the observer, which is themselves. They don't understand how they interact with what they're looking at. But there were some physicists back in the 50s who had seen not this particular behavior, but had theorized about it. And one of them, I don't remember his name, but he had said, well, the problem is the observer interferes with the observance of the object. And until you can create an artificial observer, you yourself will always interfere with your own experiment kind of thing. It was like a catch-22. Oh, you know, we want to get to the most small, sensitive matter and laws of the universe, not at the very bottom there, but because it's so sensitive, even our very presence or in any point in time will interfere with it, because when matter, things get that small, they don't interact in the same time frames that we have. A lot of it is future and past and present are all kind of the same for it. So if at any point in the future somebody would examine that experiment, then it's going to have a result as if, whether it's 1,000 years from now or 5 days from now, it's going to have the same result because somebody will be examining it. But some other scientists have come up with, they think, a workaround for it. And what they're doing is they're working with these crystal lattices, because a lot of these physicists and mathematicians have discovered that when they go through their formulas for different laws that they're working with, and they combine them together and take them apart again, and a lot of this has to do with the Hadron Collider, they find an eight-dimensional crystal lattice, geometrical shape. Whenever they convert it to geometry, it's the same thing. And they're like, why is this always showing up in different stuff? You know, it's weird for it to be a recurring theme. So they thought, well, maybe a group of us should get together and take a closer look at this. And so some of them are theorizing, well, you know, if this is a common theme, it's showing up all the time, I think we could probably use this to maybe further our knowledge of, you know, nature down at the fundamental level. So some really clever scientists said some of this I don't understand, how they can have an eight-dimensional object. It's not real. I mean, it's not something you can hold, but it exists in the formula that they create. And they said, we could probably pare this down into a three-dimensional object. And so they have different ways that they're going about doing it right now. They haven't been successful yet, but if they can... Huh. If they can bring it down to something three-dimensional, they can actually have it built. And when it is, they can use that as a proxy observer for the experiments that they're doing. And they can basically observe the observer while it is observing. And from there, they could probably figure out some stuff that they haven't been able to do before.
Well, it kind of makes you think that in their observation, the fact that it changes, that it's almost sentient. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Actually, they will be an artificial consciousness, but it's not an artificial intelligence. A little different. They're like recreating awareness. You know, they're creating an artificial awareness, but I don't think it's self-aware.
Well, I guess not the observer, but the observed nature. That the fact that it changes as they're watching it and as they're doing these experiments would lead one to believe that it has either been designed for or has its own free will, that it's sentient. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. There's got to be something. It's like it's almost like it's its own consciousness and it can do what it wants. And that's mind-boggling, seriously.
Yeah, it is.
I can't even wrap my head around it.
We've always been taught that matter is dead, basically, unless it is like human life or animal life or plant life, that it's dead. And, you know, plants don't have a will. You know, of course, we believe that. But if all matter has energy and if all matter has life in it, has a will, has... you know, sentient thought or not even thought.
And it can change.
But, yeah.
And it can almost change, or it does change according to the person's thought as to what they either think they see or want to see. It's...
Yeah, that's bizarre.
It's weird.
Like a chameleon.
It's freaking
weird.
Weird.
Yeah, it is weird. It is weird. That's bigger than the Mandela effect in some ways. I mean, because that's always been around.
I remember a few months ago, a friend of mine, we were all sitting around, and she was telling me about this experiment. And it was like, I couldn't even, it's just so crazy. It's like, you can't, I mean, you don't know, you can't figure out what it is. I don't know if that has anything to do with the fact, do you think that it has anything to do with the collider, or do you think that it always existed that way? That matter always existed the way we see it?
No, I think it's always existed that way. We've never had a chance to look at it at those, at least in the recordable history, we've never had a chance to look at it down at that level. But I do remember reading something that I don't know if it's a fact. I'll have to look into it some more. It's years ago. But they were talking about antimatter. And there's a few places in each country where it's stored. There's not much. And it's very expensive to store it, and it doesn't really last that long because our storage units aren't very because basically we use very powerful magnetic systems to try and hold it trapped in magnetic field so it can't go anywhere, because if it hits any matter, then it's gone. And they can store up to, like, maybe, you know, 0.01 of a gram, the tiniest, tiniest amount. But what I had read was that there was some media suppression about the effect of antimatter on the human psyche. And where they were storing this, people were having some pretty awful dreams and some psychotic behavior. And this included some big-name university stuff that were creating it. I don't know if it's true or not.
That'd be well worth looking into.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah, it's just, again... And we talked about it earlier in the show, you know, knowing the world as we know it and the world as we knew it before we were awake or aware of things felt safe and secure. And, you know, the truth that we were taught, the dogma, the doctrine, the indoctrination, you know, the things you're taught growing up and in public school or this or that, to not really question things outside of the status quo norm, what you're taught things do. And then with the minute you start to realize nothing's like that, I think of the Carole King song, I feel the earth move under my feet. I feel the sky tumbling down. Everything is so different than what we thought. And I mean, it just changes your whole perception of the world around you. It does for me anyway. I mean, between the Mandela effect and stuff like this, it's like, whoa, you know. You know, it's just like nothing is as it seems. And yeah. Which is why it's always, you know, for me anyway, it's always good. I come back full circle to some things, and that is my faith, and that is secure in that. You know, hey, it's held together this long, and it was like this before, I just didn't know it. You know, I just didn't know.
In the, even in the Bible about this, it says, all creation groaneth and for its return.
Yeah.
And all creation, what are you talking about? And so, if it's the subatomic matter, creation is consciousness, then it would kind of make sense, because kind of like
the
creator said.
The rocks will cry out?
Well, and another one says, for in him we move and breathe and have our being. I mean, that's the kind of stuff when I was a kid you'd hear, like, in Star Wars, you know, talking about the Force or whatever. And it's like, that's in scripture. It's just kind of glossed over because most people have comprehension.
Exactly. And the fact the rocks would cry out, how do rocks cry out? Well, if they have sentient thought, if they have, you know, within them the ability to do that, then they would do that. I think it's pretty cool. You know?
Well, another thing, when I was talking about the matter, there were a group of researchers that they, you know, like the ghost hunters that go around, and they would do the matter sampling and the gas ionization sampling and all this other kind of stuff in places that had a lot of negative paranormal activity, you know, the kind of stuff people don't like. And what they were finding was the ions that were left over and the gases and stuff, they said these are a result of the interactions between matter and antimatter, you know, these types of special muons and all this stuff. This only happens when those two interact. And they said, so some people were theorizing, well, maybe what we think of as those the unpleasant ones, the negative entities and stuff, maybe there's an antimatter component to them, why they can pass through everything and all this. But at the same time, we have a very unpleasant reaction to these creatures.
That is very interesting. I know where you're going with it, and I find it very interesting. Matter and antimatter. The positive
and
negative.
Yeah, and of course, the Large Hadron Collider produces quite a bit of it.
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
It opens the door. It opens a portal.
A lot of food. There have been people that, you guys have probably seen the pictures and all that stuff of over the sky, all the strange things around that place when they're doing their experiments. And some of it might, I mean, the pictures you probably wouldn't be photoed. That's just real stuff. Nobody can explain it. And other accounts from people of odd happenings. And you just kind of wonder, like, are these, people aware of what they're doing?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I believe they are. They are, but they're not. You know what I mean? They think they're doing A, but they're actually doing B. They have no idea it's like the deceivers have been deceived. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So they think they're doing one thing, but actually they're opening the very portals of the depths of hell itself and unleashing all of that, and they have no idea that they're doing it. They think they're just getting power and information, and their desire for that overrides and the lack of understanding.
Yeah, it kind of makes sense because I can understand their point of view, because for those, a lot of them, they've come from a very atheistic or agnostic point of view. They don't think there's even a divine anywhere. They think everything's just a big happy accident. And so what they do doesn't really matter in the big picture of things, because the universe is just going to turn into some cold, black, empty space. You know, it's a pretty unsettling.
You think it'd shake them up, though? You think that the weird stuff would shake them up? I mean, make them start to question, what the heck is this? You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have a question, and Dizzy, maybe you've seen what he's talking about. You said that I've seen the videos of CERN when they had the big parade, for a lack of a better word, the weird parade. I've seen, there's a video that talks about CERN that is really, really good. In fact, one of their scientists makes the comment about what they're really trying to do is to open a portal. I mean, just out and out says it. Like, yes, he did.
They've achieved symmetry with the other dimension, but we haven't heard much since then about what they're
right.
doing.
But
so what
that
was
being
it you
said,
said
there's
been
some new
things.
Well, there's been some new Mandela effects that have taken place. I've only seen a few of them because I kind of, don't pay a whole lot of attention to it anymore, which I guess I should. But they have there's the videos going around of the airplanes that are apparently stopping in midair. And
I saw that.
Did you see some of that?
Oh, my
so
goodness.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I've actually seen that before. Right. And I've actually seen that before with my own eyes, but to me it just seems like an optical illusion, because if it's coming straight at you or whatever, going a different angle, it looks like it's not moving. We've all done that. But I do remember seeing an airplane. It looked like it wasn't moving. I was like, how is it staying up there? And apparently the people on the planes are also indeed freaking out because they know they're not moving. How does that happen?
Right.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's almost like a time
lapse. I read an account of one plane that wound up, I think, 700 miles away from where it was supposed to be.
Right.
And CERN did take credit for that. They said, what did they call it? Basically, in their big technical terms, it was a spatial anomaly that was accidentally created from one of their experiments.
CERN.
How does that differ from the Manhattan Project?
Well, according to what I saw in the Manhattan Project, it was less controlled and people died and were fused in the ship and all that kind of stuff. So, a little different.
Was that maybe an early attempt? Was that more an early attempt at what the, you know, the same thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the power levels weren't as high, though. So.
Well, what was the Manhattan experiment again?
They took a U.S. Navy.
It was more or less basically a collider type of scenario on this ship, right? That sent them into the past or future, I don't even remember. And then some people disappeared and they were gone and some ended up dead. Is that how that goes?
Well, it was kind of more like actually they took a different approach. Instead of using some kind of particle accelerator, they had hooked up a whole bunch of electrical equipment, transformers and power banks. And, you know, that sucker was, it was really juiced. And what they had theorized was that they could make the ship invisible, like truly invisible, so you couldn't see it or anything.
Okay.
That's all they were trying to do is, you know, make the next best stealth ship. And they brought animals in cages on there, you know, but they still had people on there, which doesn't make any sense. Okay, if you're going to test on animals, you're testing on animals. Why do you have sailors on that ship, you know?
Well,
so
why not?
Yeah. So
why not?
They fired it up, and when they came to it, it was just a horrible sight. I mean, there were people, you know, guys that were dead, some that were moaning, others that were screaming, and there were people halfway into the ship, you know, that they couldn't get them out. They were part of the ship.
Like they
know,
were stuck in the curtain. In the makings of the ship.
Like
yeah,
part
like
of the ship
breaking down. They were fused to the ship. Like when they came back
and
from wherever it was they came back, they were at the wrong place. It didn't put it back where they were.
You know, now that
wow.
I think about it, the U.S. Navy will never admit to it. And they've even given official statements saying this never happened. We have no documentation, all this kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But and I used to kind of wonder, well, maybe it's just an urban legend. But there's a scientist up in Canada. I can't remember his name. He's if you check him out, he does experiments with old military equipment. He gets it all together. And none of it is classified or anything, the equipment that he has. It's just regular stuff off the shelf, but it's high grade because it's military. And he would use it to levitate cannonballs and all this stuff, but he didn't quite understand. He still doesn't quite understand the effects that it produces. But in other cases, it would take metal and shred it like it was fiber, and it would cause pieces of non-metallic objects to fuse with metal, like pieces of wood and other things, where they're completely fused with it, and you could cut, when it was done, you could cut them in half and see the grain blended right in. And I was like, huh, that's the same thing that happened on that Manhattan Project.
That is exactly what happened. You know, I'd be curious to talk to one of our sources, and you know who I'm referring to, because I know mm-hmm. when they got out of the Navy, they had a chance to read some declassified information, and they looked into Area 51 and some of that, but I would like to know his thoughts on, and if he ever looked into this, because that, you know, if they don't have the documentation, even if it's declassified, if it's still classified or they've destroyed it, then you'd never find it. But I would love to hear his thoughts on that, too.
I mean, knowing that it's possible that scientist in Canada has done all that, he had his equipment stolen once. He had a government come in several times to try and get him to help him. He said, no, I'm not working with you guys. Yeah, I mean, the government was the one stealing it. But eventually they just left him alone. And he still does his experiments and shows them to people, but the media and the press won't cover him anymore. They won't tell anybody about what he's doing.
Hmm.
And his neighbors had to move away because he doesn't quite understand all of the effects of what he's doing. And so they called it the ghost machine because when he would fire up all these powerful parts of the machine and stuff, their stuff in their houses would levitate and fly around too. And so they're like, ah, we're leaving. In fact, the town next to him had problems. In the town next to him, they thought they had ghosts and stuff. So he had to kind of get farther out into the woods.
Hmm. interesting. 5 years ago, six years ago, I started going to a local acupuncturist. He practices ancient, not traditional, but ancient Chinese acupuncture, which is the real stuff that uses meridians in the body and works and everything. He's trying to help my hip. And he put this device on there. It was kind of circular. In fact, I've got pictures of it somewhere. He put it on my hip, and it would make this ticking sound. And pretty soon, it was you could feel it ticking in rhythm with my body. And what it would do was it was like a magnet, and it would draw the red blood cells to that area because you have iron stored in your blood cells to help regenerate tissue loss and different things, you know, to heal it and everything. It was really cool. And anyway, he was telling me that the scientist who came up with this, the guy was, I think, originally from Russia and came here. Last name started with a Z. But where he lives, it's kind of a secret place because of the government giving him grief, you know, over his invention. But he was fortunate enough to get one from him directly. And it was like, he of whom we do not speak, you know. It was like one of those. I'm like, because the technology, like many things, they don't want us to know that it even exists. You know, like Tesla stuff. They poo-poo it. Like HARP. How can you say HARP doesn't exist? Just Google images, HARP, there it is. You know, yes, those are microwave emitters. What are they using them for? And why is it under the Navy? Why is it under the U.S. Navy? And I do see, you know what, we have another caller, and is now a good time? I would like to bring him on, if that's okay, Dizzy, in the U.S.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, how are you?
Well,
I haven't been listening. I don't know what we're talking about. I was in the Oxford selling my hat. How are you?
Good. How are you this evening?
Well, Carol, do you remember my black hat?
Welcome to the Cat and Dizzy Show.
Well, hi, Cat.
Yes, I do remember your black hat.
Well, I bought this hat for about $3 at a yard sale, and somebody offered me $100 for it tonight at the Oxford. And I said, no. The pretty girl that I was with, I like having the thought of her on my head. Then he offered me another $100 bill, $200 for a hat that I paid $3 for. And I'm saying, look, I'm like Ron Paul. I can't be bought. And he says, here's another $100. I said, you know, Ron Paul isn't in politics anymore. I'll take it.
That's really cool.
So,
what a story.
So I sold my $3 hat moments ago, Carol, for $300.
No way.
Yes, I did. Yes, I'm kidding. It's true. What are we talking about tonight on the Cat and Dizzy Show?
What kind of hat
It
was a thrift store hat that I paid $3 for. Everybody loved it. And this one person, the other day, some pretty girl I'd never met before braided my hair in the middle of the bar. You know, people do that thing to me all the time. Hey, can I have that hat? I'll give you $300 for it. If it's mine, they want it. So they can have it for a price, I guess.
Okay,
you know,
$300.
I guess I am. Damn it.
Sweet. Well, welcome to the Cat and Dizzy Show. We were talking about, how to explain this, matter and antimatter and physics and CERN and opening portals and the Manhattan Project and things of that nature.
Wow, there's a lot of things that our government has done very dirty, isn't it? You know, one time I was on a bus and I met a college professor that was a professor in physics, and I said, did physics take a day off on 9/11? And he said, you know, physics never takes a day off. Our government is dirty. You talk about the Manhattan Project. All you have to do is look up a lot of things that our government has done. It's really kind of sad.
Yeah, we talk about all of that on the show here. And caller, do you want to? Can I use your first name, your real name, or do you want a pseudo name?
Whatever you'd like, Carol.
He's using my name. Okay. All right, Dan. Welcome to the Cat and Dizzy Show. This is funny. We were talking about that because the fact that they deny that the Manhattan Project ever happened, and you know, we were talking earlier in the show, and this is interesting. And in fact, Dizzy, if you could kind of recap on what we were talking about with the solar flares, when that happened, and it was more than a solar flare, and your experience with that. And U.S., if you've got any input on this as well, you know, that would be great. But Dizzy, can you kind of recap?
You're talking about the one that just happened on September 11th, that solar flare?
Yes.
Flare? The one that was supposed to...
Yeah.
Well, the recap is that there was a solar flare, was extremely, extremely large, and a lady in North Salem, Indiana, actually captured it on a video where it showed this enormous ship, enormous size spacecraft, beside the sun, one either absorbing the flare or somehow deflecting it. Either way, a lot of people do speculate that crafts do get their energy from the sun. They use it for like a gas station, so to speak. So with that being said, this ship could have been doing many things, but it links back to the closures of the solar observatories that happened over the week of September 11th. They shut down. FBI came in, told people to go home, take it easy, have a couple days off, whatever, while they were working on a national security thing. And with all of this information going around, now then we've collected some evidence and found out that the two are somehow are connected as far as the craft absorbing and supposedly almost and saving us from this huge solar flare. That's where.
Yeah. Right. So that we were talking about that earlier. So the fact that, you know, there are those who are altruistic and think that, well, they were just trying to avoid panic. But no, there's more to it. They've always got a hand in what's going on. So it just kind of makes you wonder why. Go ahead.
You know, if you think, why would our government do that? Or how could they do that? If you research, if you give me just a second to explain this, if you research Operation Northwood, it's a project in which the Joint Chiefs of Staff formulated a plan to create terrorist activities on the United States and abroad and blame those activities on a foreign state, actually Cuba, to incite the American people to war against Cuba. And the Kennedy administration rejected that plan. So our government was ready to do those types of things back in the Kennedy administration to create terrorist-like activities on domestic and foreign soil and blame those activities on a foreign state. That was back in the Kennedy administration. Our government can do all kinds of things. You talk about the Manhattan Project? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. It goes back further too. I mean, even Pearl Harbor was kind of a 9/11. I mean, those ships were in a formation that they would not have been in unless they knew an attack was coming. You know, and why was that to justify getting us into the war to get people angry enough?
Didn't the state of Israel actually bomb one of our military naval ships at one point?
Well, that's something.
I believe that Israel bombed one of our naval ships. So,
U.S., can you speak to that?
I
don't remember the exact name of the event, but I remember reading something that Israel did bomb one of our naval ships.
Yeah, right.
I remember, Carol. Can you help me on that one?
It was the U.S.
Yeah, absolutely.
Liberty.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm going to the U.S. Liberty was bombed.
That's it.
Well, they weren't just bombed.
Yeah.
They sent in a strike force after them, and the U.S. Liberty put up a flag right away to show that they were U.S. And because they had attacked, you know, the Navy, the airplanes came in and hit them once, and so they raised the flag to show they're U.S. And the Israeli warplanes come around again, strafe the flag down. I mean, they're good enough pilots, they could just shoot it. They raise the second flag up, and they strafe that as well while they were doing all the bombing and all that stuff. And they were trying to actually they were trying to make sure there were no survivors because they didn't want this getting out. And but there were other naval vessels in the area that just saw what was going on, didn't care about orders, went over and left the guys out of the water because the Israeli pilot in violation of the Geneva Convention and all this stuff were strafing these guys in the water in their life jackets. They were trying to make sure there were no survivors whatsoever, but it didn't work out. There were quite a few survivors, and so the president.
Why was that swept under the? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Why? Inside, there's some music going on that I'm playing tonight. So, yeah, I'm jamming with the band. I just got some new spoons, some nice wooden spoons. So I'll try to maybe call back in later, but I got to go back inside and play some music.
Okay.
All right. Well, you have fun. Thanks for calling, Dan.
Bye for now.
Yes, sir. Bye-bye.
Bye, Dan. Thank you.
Okay. USY, why did they do that?
Actually, I don't know. I mean, there have been a lot of people theorizing, but I'm not really sure because all I know is there were some declassified documents, Israeli documents that they got a hold of, which had the transcripts from the pilots and the control and all that, because the pilots had called it in. And they were told, take them out. And the pilots called in again to double check and make sure because they said, this is an American vessel. They said, take it out. Okay. So they went in and did it. But I don't know why.
Wow. And then it was swept under the rug.
Yeah. I also heard that it was a CIA ship for collecting data. And I did hear also that the ship was in the process, they were recording all of the electronic communications, not just from Israel, but Egypt and other stuff, because it was right during that war that when Israel was going after Egypt. So I'm thinking maybe they were probably, no matter whose side they were on, they were collecting data, which can be dangerous if you're doing something wrong. And I'm thinking it might have been at that time, if we look into what they were doing to the Egyptians, that they probably would have gotten in trouble for it if it came out.
So it would have implicated the Israelis for what was going on, you know, how they were dealing with that.
Stuff. And they were like, you know, basically, we don't care which side you're on, we're not going to take that chance kind of deal.
Wow. How did we handle that? Do you remember? I say we, the government, the president, the whatever.
Yeah. He just announced it. He told the people that were going to do the investigating, we're not investigating it. It was an accident. I will not embarrass our allies, because he had already received phone calls from people that were the ones that were actually in charge of the government, not the president. And they said, yeah, we're going to spin this right now for the American public and don't even bother with the investigation.
So they were those that were killed. Go ahead.
It was short-sighted because later on down the road, when people start asking questions, they don't have answers. Because if they would have at least done an investigation and done all the efforts to doctor and everything, it would have been a lot easier for them to, fool the public later on. But maybe they weren't so concerned about it because they're pretty successful at doing it now.
Huh. That is so interesting because I'm thinking, you know, those that were killed on the U.S. Liberty, I mean, those sailors who died, how do I want to say this? They have families and stuff, right? I mean, aren't there people who are, probably they have been beating their heads on a wall trying to get answers and justice.
It's really, see, there's like a whole big problem with any kind of military because military families, they tend to kind of follow the party line, even especially the part about not asking questions, because there's different reasons why they don't ask questions. Some of them are afraid to find out the truth, you know, and others, they blindly believe in whatever government tells them they're in charge. And, you know, they're like, well,
so they
I get
sold
a paycheck
their children out. Like, hey, I got a nice flag and I got to, you know, have a nice funeral for my son and feel patriotic because I sold my son to the government, you know, and I get this nice flag when I bury him.
That's
you know, all
the way
feelings for patriotism, rah-rah. That's just, that's just, yeah, no, that's not patriotism. And I just, can I rant for a minute? I had a conversation, like I said, with someone recently and at work, and it brought things up. And I was talking to this guy who was repairing a piece of leather furniture. He comes and repairs our leather stuff that comes from China because it always needs to be repaired. Doesn't that, customers always bringing stuff back that was made in China. But anyway, we're talking, and I mentioned to him that I have a son who lives in Cambodia. And he's like, well, what's he doing in Cambodia? You know, why is he over there? And I said, he's an entrepreneur, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, well, why Cambodia? And I looked at him and I said, because here it's 70% of your income goes to one form of taxation or another, collectively 70%. It said there it's only 1%. And I said, he's an expat and a patriot. And when you figure that out, you'll be awake. And he just looked at me with his eyebrows up by his hairline. Yeah. It sounds contradictory, but it isn't. To be an expat and a patriot at the same time, there is such a thing. There was a movie made years ago about an incident. It's called A Man Without a Country. Anybody remember that? And the man, it was back in the 1700s, and he had to live on a ship. He couldn't come back on U.S. soil, and how much he regretted. No, he wanted to come back, the land that he loved, blah, 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 blah. But the reasons that he went out there, he had a problem with what was going on and with the government, you know? And he was angry about what was going on. And that movie was to indoctrinate people to the idea that you just love your government. You love your government. You accept whatever they say, and then you'll be glad to be here, you know. I remember seeing that movie and thinking there's something very wrong with this. You know, this man should have been allowed to go live wherever he wanted to live if he didn't like being here. And if he had a problem with what was going on here, what about the ideas of speaking up? I mean, what about free speech? What about, you know, why would that be such a wrong thing to oppose what is wrong? Isn't that what we did when we spoke out against England? What's the difference? You know what I mean? So that you better shut up and go along with what we say, or we're going to make you live on a ship, you know, and you'll never get to touch soil again. Well, that's not right. And
it's the law of the sea, which we're all, the law of the sea.
The law of the sea?
Admiralty law, yeah.
Yeah, maritime law. But the whole thing was just wrong. I mean, you can be an expat and be a patriot because it's not the government. Your loyalty is not to government. Your loyalty is to ideas, seriously, and to people around your community. Ooh. It is not your government, you know.
I'm burning up. Just,
you're burning up?
Yeah, I'm having a hot flash or something.
Oh, okay.
I'm melting right now.
No, I did feel warmer for just a moment. I felt warmer, thank you. Because it is cold and rainy and wet up here, so...
Oh, it's beautiful.
But
I was on the lake all day.
Yeah. On
with
the lake?
Beer and, yeah, with
Ooh.
Beer and more. Yeah, and now I'm starting to kind of feel like I have a headache. I think it's the alcohol.
Oh, no, you need to drink. Drink water. Drink water. Detox your body.
Yes, yeah. I need water.
I thought you said deer. A lake with deer.
Oh, there were deer.
It's beer, not deer. There were deer on deer drinking beer on the lake. That's funny.
There were deer there too. Yes, it was a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect. Could not have been any better day. And then yesterday,
cool.
Tomorrow is supposed to be gorgeous as well. So thank you for that. Saturday was nice too. So I can't complain about the weather at all.
Well, good, good. That is the weather forecast for Indianapolis. That is not the weather forecast for Iowa or Wisconsin.
That is not for the rest of the country.
Well, that is cool that you guys are having good weather, because we're not. But you get our weather within a couple of days of us anyway, so hang tight. It'll be your way. But, yeah, but just wanted to say something regarding that. The ideas of liberty... this was a grand experiment. on this continent. And when that all goes south and people let go of it and becomes a socialist government and the direction it has, you know, we can start over somewhere else. We can take those ideas somewhere else. And that's kind of, so when you talk about, yeah, an expat and they join an expat community, they're taking those ideas somewhere else, you know, where they're able to be free and able to exercise their choices and economic freedom and an opportunity to pursue life, liberty, and happiness, you know. When it becomes so oppressive in the country that you're under the government you're in, it doesn't matter. That's why it's, how do I want to say, what Richard Haass said, president of the Council on Foreign Relations, in that epic piece that he wrote back in 2008 regarding national sovereignty being an illusion that we're allowed to keep. If Americans wake up and understand where they're at, if enough of them do, you know, you can still throw off the chains. It's not too late, but they have to wake up and realize where we're at. They feel the wave, but they don't know what's causing it.
Yeah, you know, actually, the Constitution, before they finished it, when they were still working on it, they originally were going to say life, liberty, and property. And I really wish they would have said that instead of the pursuit of happiness, because to me, the pursuit of happiness, it's almost like a mocking, like, yeah, we've got your property, good luck, go try and find happiness, because you don't own anything. Because when we try to buy land, we're not buying land, we're buying property.
Right. Yeah, that you pay tax on because they own it, basically.
The biggest, yeah, there are large foundations and stuff that have spent a lot of money and time to research the causes of economic disparity, which we all know what they are. But, of course, smart people have to spend a lot of money to figure out the same thing we know intrinsically, right? And what they found out was that it boiled down to land ownership. They said in these, especially, you know, these third world countries where the people are constantly going into revolts and having all this violent civil war and unrest, it had to do with land ownership, because when the government would come in power, it would seize so much land of people that they had worked hard for. And then eventually they'd get so unhappy about it, they just throw that government out and put another one in. And, of course, those people didn't know much better, and they do the same thing all over again.
like we want new masters. We want new masters.
Well, you know, there was something really interesting about the way that I know I'm going to say something from the Bible, but in the Old Testament, the way that they did it was that land, it belonged to that family. And even if the family had some young rapscallion of a man or woman, but usually it was the guys with the booze and stuff, and they just went out drinking, partying, and they wasted all their money, and they sold their land so they could keep up that lifestyle. Eventually, it was all gone. Nothing left. The family still wasn't out, because that land, the man who was in charge of that family, he could not sell that land longer than a certain number of years. At the most, I think it was 50. And then it would revert back to the family automatically. So when he sold it to somebody
it's a year of jubilee.
It was a recurring date, and that's how they would base it off of, say, okay, we've got 7 years of productivity we can get out of this land. We'll pay you this much for it, because we know it automatically goes back to your family. And that way it protected the family from any fools that might come up in there and try to completely, yeah, they would waste it for a whole generation, but eventually they have to die. And then somebody else would come up later and be like, I am not doing what my grandpa or my dad did. I'm going to make good on this for my family, because we went through complete poverty and begging all those years. We've got the land back. Now we're going to be productive with it. You know, I thought that's wonderful. And even when somebody wanted to sell themselves into bondage, they could only do it for 7 years. They could not sell themselves for any longer than that. There was no contract allowed past the 7-year mark. And they had to be released after that, which is great, because we today are born into bondage from generation. And those people back then, if they chose, could go into a 7-year bondage. Or maybe they didn't choose. Maybe they ran into some really serious problems, whatever, with their family or financial, and it had to be done. The longest it could be is 7 years.
Isn't that cool? Could you imagine, I mean, after 7 years, no debt whatsoever?
You couldn't buy a house on a 20-year note. You couldn't buy it on a 15- or a 10-year note. The longest note you could get for a house was 7 years. But they also had, well, everything was the gold standard, of course, and or silver. It was real currency. So it never lost value.
And you couldn't
those
charge
were,
usury. You could not charge usury, which is...
Those people were so rich back then. That's why they had a lot more wars and stuff, because they had a lot more wealth. I know it sounds contradictory. Why? They had a lot of wealth, a lot of wars. Yeah, they had a lot of free time on their hands. Plenty of time to fight, you know, go after each other. It was a pretty common practice back then. The kings would go to war a certain time of the year, and they're like, oh, time to go to battle. But now we're all...
Yeah,
kind of a trade-off, I guess. But, you know, they had a lot of freedom, even if...
I don't know about it being a trade-off when we're in 148 different nations, nation-building, and we've got this big standing military and everything. I mean, they're out there to take resources and everything. I mean, that's why they're there. But the problem
is but
we are
in the U.S.
We are also in. Well, I was just going to say, we're kind of, because we are being taxed to death, we are wage slaves, and so it's no different. They're taking from us as much as they are the people that, you know, the resources in other places. Who's making good on it? Sure isn't you or me. So
yeah, but our lives are marginally better than theirs. Because you got to keep
the
slaves happy. If they're not happy, then you got problems.
That's bread and circuses.
That's. You know, the mainstream media, all that stuff, keep them happy, keep them distracted, and all that kind of stuff. Don't whatever you do, don't get thinking, then there's going to be problems.
Right.
Well, it's interesting.
Yeah, so many
to me
people
because,
I talk to. Huh?
Well, I'm finding that there are more people who are aware of what's going on and who are not singing the tune of, well, you just pay your taxes and do what they tell you to do and everything will be fine. I mean, there are more people who are aware of what we are paying out and of what's going on. I mean, there are more people. They feel it because it used to be the people at the very bottom who, you know, you feel it first. But it seems like everybody's dropping down a few tiers except those who make a lot of money, you know. And so everyone feels it.
There's a gentleman I'm dealing with the factory that I'm starting up. He's older, very wise. He's been running his company for 50 years, whatever. And he told me what his views were about the economic state of our country, all that kind of stuff. And he said to him, it feels like this is the last big push, the last hurrah, as he called it, because he said, we're getting so much business right now. Everybody's so busy. But he didn't see much hope for the future. He's like, you know, he thinks it's just a hiccup. Just a happy, small thing. And he's been around a long time.
Well, if you recognize, economics, knowing, you know, quantitative easing created a bubble, and the last QE3, when that bubble burst, we're going to be in a lot of trouble, and we're feeling the effects. Even 5 years ago, the dollar's devalued about, believe it or not, 50% buying power overall. Seriously, your dollar, in other words, if you made $7 an hour, I'm just pulling a number out of the air, 5-6 years ago, you made $7 an hour. And if you're making $10 an hour now, but you still just can't get by, in fact, less so than you could, it's because it's almost like you're making $5 an hour now or $7 an hour now. The dollar has so devalued that our wages don't keep up with the value of the dollar. But you see it if you look at real estate, you know, if you look at in the grocery store what you're paying, overall,
yeah.
And then you have taxation. You know, the living wage that you have, what you actually. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a group called the RAND Corporation, and they've studied some of this stuff, and they put out their results. Now, their solutions, of course, are, you know, the big government crap. But what they've discovered, or what I should say, the data that they've uncovered and revealed is pretty telling. They said wages in the U.S. have been stagnant for the last 20 years. They haven't gone up one single bit. Because they said this is one of the problems in the U.S. as far as the income disparity and everything. And I was like, wow, I didn't even know it was that bad. I thought it was last maybe 10 or 12, and it's not the last 20 years. Then they called it the real wage or whatever, because the numbers have gone up. Yeah, people make $7 an hour, they said, but the buying power of it hasn't changed in the last 20 years, which, you know, is pretty incredible.
Yeah, it is, when you think about it. I think back 20 years ago, what my late ex-husband, what he made 30 years ago, and what he made then, he made like $13, $14 an hour back then, and that was decent, but, you know, he was skilled to work in a factory, but now that's, you know, $14 an hour, that's kind of the common wage in this area anyway, and yet if, you know, what we paid for a house, you know, to rent or to buy a home back then, it was like less than half what you would pay now. In fact, yeah, it was way less than half of what you would pay now. So that kind of tells you, buy a gallon of milk back then. Remember getting a gallon of milk for a dollar?
Mm-hmm.
I do.
Remember when
yeah,
I sold it?
Yeah, remember.
Yeah. It was 25 cents.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, and it's just... I'm watching a kitten getting into a laundry basket. It's really cute. But anyway, yeah, so I think it's important to know, as someone pointed out here on the show, China won the war economically. Whether it's China that won or not, we lost. I mean, we've got to understand where we're at, and it's not China. It was those who sold us out. Our manufacturing jobs went over. And when did it become a good idea to send our manufacturing jobs to China and then buy everything back at Walmart for a whole lot less? But maybe.
The gentleman that I spoke to, he talked about that as well. And he really did not have a very high opinion of people that worked in government, even at the local level. And example, he'd been looking for some help because he wanted someone to start a business in a field where he needed supplies because he wasn't getting any good supplies. And the local government people were like, oh, you want someone that wants to start a business? We got all kinds of people. He said, well, I need it in manufacturing. I need it in this specific sector. I'm like, and the more he explained to them, the less they were with him. And by the end of it, they said, we really don't know what you're talking about. And he's like, don't you have anybody here at all? And they said, no, none of us have any experience with manufacturing. It's all retail, real estate, all this other stuff. It's kind of ironic, you know, real estate. And he was like, yeah, you know, I just don't have a high opinion of those people. He said, as far as he's concerned, they're all worthless. Because he's like, they're all not retail manufacturing itself. Retail is worthless. But he said, as far as the government officials, all being from one pool of business, you know, taking a product and reselling it maybe for the second or third time. He's like, there's no producers there. You know, yeah, yeah. And that's what
right.
He said about countries.
Right, and I can tell you.
When a country loses its manufacturing base, it loses its wealth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're absolutely right. I what I'm doing currently, I am a purchasing agent for a furniture department of a local, I don't know, business that they do furniture, flooring, and cabinetry, and kitchens, all this sort of thing. But I'm the one who orders the furniture and processes it all in and everything. And so I see all the numbers. And in the almost 2 years that I've been there, I've watched products that we're buying at cost go way, way up. What's interesting is I also now handle the service calls. So we get stuff that you know, we get the call from the person who says, hey, I just bought this a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And then I have someone who say, you know, and some big name, I'm not going to say the names on here, but you would recognize the names of the manufacturers. And you know they're coming over from China. We know that those pieces are coming over from there. And they'll say to me, you know, in the other room I've got this sofa, and it's a Lane sofa or a Broyhill, and it's like 30 years old or 40 years old. I've never had a problem with it. Never, you know. And yet I got this stuff like 3 years ago, and this is what's going on. You know, and those are the ones we see coming back for service or replacing it or whatever. And we know why, and I'll tell them. I tell them straight up, that's because what you bought came from China. And
yeah.
I tell them why. I tell them about the WTO. I tell them about what happened when our manufacturing jobs went over to China, what happened to our country and to the dollar. I educate, believe it or not, the people who call in with those complaints about their furniture. And, of course, we honor that and take care of it. But I tell them this is why. You know, you want good stuff, buy bought in America. You don't find, you know, you're going to get what you pay for. But you want to change it? Bring our manufacturing
right.
jobs home. You know,
yeah,
do it yourself. Manufacture here.
Places like China, they still have a very high opinion of American quality. Even American businesses, American business ownership, they just think it's the top. They're like, oh, you know. But over here, I guess our consumers were just ignorant. I don't know.
Well, they think they're being overcharged because it isn't as common anymore for things to be manufactured here. If you buy a leather sofa that's made in China, it's at cost. A leather sofa is going to be about, I'm going to say, $1,000. That's cost. That's not retail. If you buy one that's made in the U.S., it's about double that. So you're going to pay for what you get, but you're going to get better craftsmanship. But the other problem, too, is where are they getting their leather? Are they buying it from China? If it's made completely, every part of it in the U.S., you're going to have usually a better product.
Oh,
you
yeah.
Know? Usually
one
again,
of those, a lot of these Chinese companies, the owners of those companies, they are actually, there's a billionaire. He just recently, where was it? It's somewhere around in the Midwest. It's either Iowa or Illinois. He just recently built a very large factory with his, you know, his own money. And they asked him, why are you building a factory in the U.S. and having your stuff here? And he said, well, there's actually several reasons for it. Of course, because the Chinese wage has gone up so high Okay, let me back up. The first reason is the Chinese wages have continued to rise. They've gotten so high now that Chinese companies are actually considering it part of their profit margin. Like, oh, wow, we're really paying these people a lot. And they're becoming very wealthy, even the workers. That's the fact. And while at the same time, over here in the U.S., American wages, yes, by the dollar they have increased, but by the buying power, they've been stagnated. And they haven't gone up in the last 20 years, which makes for a very nice profit margin for any company here in the U.S. And that's what changed. Like, well, their workers are way cheaper than ours. American workers, way cheaper than Chinese. And then, of course, there's American work ethic and all that other stuff. And then, yeah, you know, we think we're going to go over there. So when it says made in America, it could very well be true that it's made in America, even if the company is owned by China.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I would like to see something that says made in America by an American-owned, you know, company, by a company owned by American citizens. That sounds really bad, but it's the only way you know where the wealth, because it still happens, the wealth goes up to the top. The owners have the most, and the management team have the most of the money that's generated by that company. And if they don't have their roots in that country, then it's just going overseas. And they're not
right.
investing in their community or like that.
It's interesting because even like Toyota is a Japanese-owned company, but yet it's manufactured here in the U.S. and other places. But, I mean, think about that. So we've become so convoluted, yet, like you said, who's really making the money off of it? Where's it really going in the end? and how do you bring it back to where it's American excellence, American parts, American, you know, you've worked in a place and where they got when they got their parts from China, what was the quality?
I'll give you a great example. Yep. The company I currently work for, they just changed ownership. The owner's a nice man and his wife. They're getting older, and the man was like, well, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. If I don't wake up one morning, the company's going to be in a lot of trouble. So they looked for the last 3 years for a suitable candidate to take majority ownership of the company. And they finally found one and announced them last week. This individual, they knew actually since he was a little boy because he had been their paper boy. And he worked hard his whole life, saved his money, and you know, as far as I know, he's a really great guy. But the important thing also is that he has his roots and ties in the community, family, all that kind of stuff. He's not going anywhere. And they're like, okay, so this is the person that's going to keep the company here and going forward. So they had announced that, and I thought, you know, this is a really good choice because the people aren't afraid for their jobs, and they know that not too much is going to change for the – it's not going to change for the worse at least. It won't be like some foreign company coming in, firing a bunch of people, and then, you know, dropping the wages and all that kind of stuff. Not like they're that high anyway.
Yeah.
But it's nice to know that the company's still going to be, because it's a fallback for a lot of people who couldn't find work anywhere else. So that's an example of how people could keep it local. You know, you have people who have ties to the community.
Yeah.
So it starts at grassroots. It starts at the bottom. It isn't a government job to fix, because government can't fix it, and they're not going to, because their interest isn't like our interest is.
Consumers educate themselves and they look at the product and say, well, what does that company do for my community? You know, what have they done? Are they helping with a boys club? No, there's no such thing anymore. It's only boys and girls club. It's another crazy thing. They should have a girls club and a boys club. But anyway, helping, you know, something in the local community, not just writing like Walmart, they put up on their walls when they write a $200 check somewhere. Like, really?
I know. It's really big, and it's right there in the front, and I had to laugh. I saw it, too.
Yeah,
I'm like, that's really
funny. It must have cost you guys $50 to make that thing, and you're proud of it? Yeah. Like, oh, my gosh.
I think there should be several more zeros on there. And then they always ask, do you want to donate to Children's Miracle Network? And you know where the majority of that money goes. And I always look at them, and I say, no, are you kidding?
Oh, speaking of which, I read about the newest tax scam that the rich, the filthy rich do is foundation. And maybe it's not new, but it's new to me. I was like, huh, because I'd always had a really rotten feeling about when they say the Clinton Foundation. I'm like, wait a second. Why do they got some big, huge organization just after their middle name? That sounds like a tax scheme, you know, to avoid taxes. And sure enough, that's all it is. They funnel all the money they want through that thing, and it's just incredible. It's all theirs.
It is. Yeah. Well, we've got 24 minutes left in the show, but I don't know about you, but I'm winding down a little bit, and I'm going to ask, I've enjoyed the show tonight. I'm going to say our callers and everything, it's been information each of you brought to the show, it's been amazing. So I appreciate it. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, and I'm going to be looking more into the solar flare thing. That is just so interesting.
Was that a recent picture? Because I saw one a few years ago, but took it. Huh?
Yes, there is a new video. I don't know if it's on the Cat and Dizzy show or not. And yes, it is a very recent picture. The one out of North Salem that she took with the massive thing beside the sun is a new picture. I think it was
That's
taken
like 3 weeks old.
Yeah.
3 weeks ago.
Yeah.
So it was September 6th, I think, is when it happened, and then the 11th was when they started. Well, they started before that shutting them down, but the one in New Mexico, the big one, was on the 11th. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Yes, and of course,
I can
she had no idea what she had taken a picture of. So that's why she put it on the internet for people's opinions. And, of course, then that's when it blew up. And it's been removed from a few different places as well. So they've said. I didn't have any problem finding it, though.
Well, I'm going to share it quickly. So before they remove it, I'm going to see if I can share it. If you have your – only because sometimes my phone does not allow me to share things to the Cat and Dizzy Facebook page. If you could do that, Dizzy, if you could share it there, and U.S., I will share it with you personally. Get that over to you. So, yeah, so I appreciate that. So we're going to go ahead and end the show with a song. And what do we want to do tonight? Do we want to do a Jordan page, or do we want to do something – crazy and strange?
I don't have a preference.
I like Linkin Park, Great Divide. Do you have that?
We have what?
Or New Divide. Linkin Park is a song called New Divide.
No, Linkin Park, huh? New Divide.
Yeah,
I don't think
nice
we do
song.
Have that loaded. I'll
check
for
it
and see. Definitely. Yeah, Linkin Park.
Pour me some Linkin Park. I was just talking about Chester Bennington and all that. That's a whole nother topic.
We should revisit that. Maybe see what's happened with all
should.
Of that.
We should.
Yeah.
We most
yeah.
certainly should.
Okay. Well, how
anyway.
About we plan on looking at that? Okay. All right, so I'm going to go ahead and just play some Jordan Page tonight, and we're going to do Pendulum. So Pendulum swings from the left to the right. All right, and we're caught in the middle. So you guys have a good night. Thanks for calling into the show, U.S., as usual. And Dizzy, thanks to my co-host. It was fun.
Yes, thank you very much. Good night, all.
All right.
Enjoy the song.
Good night. Yeah, here we go.
I've been walking a tightrope between fact and fiction. Been wrestling with demons in small bottle prisons. Been talking to sinners who claim to be Christian. Been shouting at leaders who claim to be listening. And the pendulum swings from the left to the right. Its momentum increases the need for the fight. Like a moment of blindness and a lifetime of sight. And I am caught somewhere in the middle. A saw president blind to the needs of his people. Saw a camel that passed through the eye of a needle. Saw a group of old men whose money was evil. Saw a cross breaking free from the cage. like a mirror. You showed